Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about how we use movement assessments. We talk about hip flexors and if they are truly tight. And we talk about cookie cutter approaches in physical therapy.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 9 of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. I'm here with my co-owner, champion, director of PT, Lenny Macrina.
Thank you, Mike.
Nice.
Great to be here.
At LenMacPT.
At LenMacPT.
On Twitter. That's Lenny's Twitter hash, not
Twitter handle.
Username. Yeah. Coolness. Gabe is also here, so our PT student. The Gabinator is here for this episode, as always, because we make him. He really doesn't have a choice. But Gabe, you're on Twitter now, right?
I am.
Yeah.
Just joined the revolution.
What do you think? What do you think so far?
It's pretty good. I've been seeing a lot of good stuff coming out there. I mainly follow a lot of strength coaches, a lot of physical therapists. I tend to like avoid the Kanye Wests and like the Kim Kardashians of the world. But
so entertaining, though. PTs are so boring.
Do you follow them?
No.
I like Twitter to get information.
Get in, get out.
Yeah. I think even the sports was too much. I started getting inundated with too much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's just too much. It's too much. Anybody that's doing 6 tweets an hour is just killing my timeline. But anyway, all right, let's get rolling. You want to do some questions? All right, Gabe.
First one comes from John in Newcastle. John asks, what is your stance?
Newcastle. I like Newcastle. Oh, sorry.
That's brown. The brown ale.
Brown.
Lenny liked brown ale. I knew that about Lenny. We know each other. And Lenny, what do I like?
You like IPAs.
Nice. All right. This is good. What kind of IPA?
Like Stone IPA or I can't think of the name right now. I'm choking.
Yeah, West Coast.
Yeah, what? Well, yeah,
Lagunitas.
Yes.
Firestone.
Yes.
Those are my good ones. Yes. That's my favorite there. Gabe, what do you like?
Any kind of beer, really.
All right,
Bud heavy.
Yeah, he's in college.
Daddy light.
Don't really have a choice.
That's all right. If you're a minor, I would not listen.
Gonna be 21 or over.
All right, Gabe.
All right, John asks, what is your stance on movement screen?
You just added a little flair to the question, then. John asks. That's gonna be your thing now.
All right.
Start. Do it again.
What is your stance on
movement
screen?
No, say John asks again.
John asks. What is your stance on movement screening as a tool to help in the classification of an individual's physical health? And what method do you use to prefer, i.e. SFMA, physiotherapist, self-made one, etc.? Thanks.
All right, so let's keep on topic with his question here. What do we use for a movement system but to determine health? So not function, because you know there's stuff like the FMS, the NASM has a good one, you know, as well for like a movement screen if you're trying to set somebody up on a program. But you're talking about for health. I mean, I'll jump in and speak for Lenny, but I'll let him elaborate too. But I think we're both SFMA trained. I've been to a bunch of SFMA courses. I've seen Greg Rose, I've seen Mike Voigt teach it. I've seen Kyle teach. I think I've seen everybody teach it, just because I they come through Boston and I like to go to the courses. So I've done a bunch of SFMA and you know, good friends with people like, you know, Mike Boyd and stuff. So when we speak at meetings, I'm always impressed with what they've done with some of those movement things. But you know, I would say we use the SFMA, but I would say that we're never locked into one system. And depending on the person in front of us, we may kind of changed a little bit. So with like baseball players, we treat a ton of baseball players. So we may do a couple of baseball specific things too. With a golfer, we do some specific golf things. With just a normal orthopedic person, we might just do a standard SFMA. But we look at that, but then we also do a bunch of other stuff. But that being said, we've been doing this for a while, right? So if you're young and you're new and you're just learning, like start with something like SFMA because it covers the basics, it covers everything. And then as you start to see patterns emerge and you start to see things in your practice, then you can kind of change and you can kind of go from there. If you're a fitness person, I mean, there's plenty of screens out there. I think FMS is fantastic. I think, Cressy Robertson and Hartman's Assess and Correct is a good resource as well for you to check out. There's plenty of things out there. But so Lens SFMA, TPI certified as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on these things?
Yeah, I completely agree with most of what you said. I think just not getting locked in to one, and that's it. I think you need to, because if you may have somebody in front of you who you're using an SFMA on or an FMS, whatever you're using, but you don't get their history, and then maybe they did play baseball growing up, and you start doing testing, and you're looking like, what can they reach and all that, and they fail, you're like, oh, you failed. You're a one or whatever you're going to rate them at, but
nobody fails.
You fail, I'm sorry, yes. You end up with a one, your score is low, and you're like, all right, we got a crank on you. Maybe it's an anatomy thing. Maybe it's a bony thing, and they develop that over the years. So you got to pull that out in their history. But I tend to lean on SFMA. To me, it's a very logical and simplistic version, and it breaks all the joints down. It kind of keeps things just kind of rolling along as I do my assessment. I'm just locked on one particular joint. It allows me to look above and below and kind of break each joint down individually. So every one of these tests has their flaws, but I like to keep it simple and then use this as my base and then go break out from there.
And I'm always envious of like the students that come from like Belmont University, or Mike Voigt's one of the professors and stuff. I mean, they learn this as part of their curriculum, and I think it's an outstanding kind of baseline. Gabe, what are you guys doing in school for movement skills?
We briefly touched on the FMS. We didn't really go into the SFMA, and that kind of is like depending on what your clinical rotation's like. I know with my first rotation, I was big on like the FMS and the SFMA, so I got a little bit of that when I was going through that curriculum.
Good. So you got it on your clinical. Yeah, I wish they did more in the curriculums, but we'll get there, I guess. So, all right, what's next, Gabe?
All right. This next question comes from Atlanta, Georgia, so definitely I like the representation.
Gabe
Here's
likes
your neck of the woods.
Gabe likes this one already.
That's my home. Like,
this is the next question from Gabe.
This is from Will Bolt. Will asks, do we overstretch the hip flexors? It seems like they're always implicated in postural issues, but it usually is an issue of stiffness or hypertonicity.
I definitely think we overstretch the hip flexors, and I actually think the majority of time we stretch the hip flexors, we're not really stretching the hip flexors. We're torquing the anterior capsule, we're arching the low back because you don't have hip extension mobility. So, some of those like pulse mobs into the wall and stuff like that, I think they're more counterproductive than they are helpful. So that's why we, I get a bunch of videos on my website, but we talk about what we call the true hip flexor stretch quite a bit, where you're kind of like a little bit more kind of like erect posture and you work more on that posterior tilt than you do kind of leaning forward to stretch in for the hip flexor. So I definitely think we do it too much. I do think we're short, and I think it's posturally short from the positions we're in, but that's a tough muscle to just think that just stretching it is going to do enough, and maybe it's so tight we have to go crazy stretching. That's one of those areas I think we do more damage than good by overstretching.
Yeah, I would think if it is truly tight, which maybe it is, but why is it tight because of what's going on the other side of the joint? Do we have glutes that are glutes that are not activated as well? Look at Tiger Woods. He couldn't activate his glutes. No, I'm kidding. I think we need to take a full approach. Look at the hamstrings, look at the glutes, look at the lumbar spine, lumbar extensors, and see what are they doing in relation to the hip flexors. What's the person doing all day long? Because maybe we can get that tone to relax slightly with getting muscles activated on the other side of the joint. So there's a reciprocal inhibition that goes on, and that could be playing a role as well. So the hip flexors are tight for a reason.
Yeah, totally agree. So I think it goes back to the question, the hypertonicity is part of it. And again, that comes down to how everything else functions together. So we do some like true hip flexor stretching, but we're not aggressive with it. We do it a little bit, but we do it within an integrated fashion where we address all the other aspects that Lenny kind of alluded to. And that's when they get better. I think if you're just jamming it into hip extension, I think you make your symptoms worse.
Yeah.
So, all right, Dave, what's next? One more?
Yeah, last one. This one comes from Adrian from Mesa, Arizona. What is your advice to PT students on rotation that have clinical instructors that have cookie cutter ways of treating patients?
Oh, I like that.
Is she a student?
I'm assuming so.
So she's a student. What's your advice on clinical instructors that have cookie cutter approaches?
God, I would not want to be her CI.
I hope
right
your CI is listening, right? They probably aren't, though, right? I think that's her point.
That's why they do a cookie cutter.
that's her point. Heck, I mean, yeah, I get cookie cutters. I get it. It's everything you come across in life is a learning opportunity. You learn how you want to do things and how you don't want to do things, and you put it together to become you. So I think everything is a good learning opportunity. The fact that you've already identified that they seem to be doing too much cookie cutter, that's fine. I don't know. It's not to sound weird. Not that I think cookie cutters are okay sometimes, but if you come and you present with a certain thing, we have a few go-to things that we tend to do. I don't know if you would call that cookie cutter. I mean, Gabe, do you think we cook cookie cutter things here?
No, it's all like based upon what the patient presents with.
Yes, we would have failed him from a clinical.
Right,
if he
said but you see a lot of overlap. So it may appear cookie cutter to you right now, but you do see a lot of overlap of people that have very common issues of cuff weakness, if it's a shoulder or a scapular weakness or postural dysfunction. So there's a lot of go-to exercises that you can use, and you will end up potentially creating a little cookie cutter yourself. The connotation's negative, and you don't want to think of it like that, but there are a lot of fundamental issues that most people do have.
Well said. I mean, give your CI a little credit, maybe. Like, maybe they're not as cookie cutter as you think. You know, maybe you're being a little too critical for them. I think Lenny isolated that well. If you were to come here, we talk about this with Gabe now. Like, we do a lot of, we treat as many healthy people as we do injured people, which is a little different for PT. I mean, we kind of call it performance therapy sometimes, but if you're coming here to optimize yourself, so let's say you're, a hockey athlete or a football athlete. Let's say your football will make it easy, and you're coming and working with us in the summer to get ready for football season. We might be doing similar drills with everybody because they're all 1 month away from their season, if that makes sense. So is that cookie cutter? I mean, everybody does get an individualized flair, but there's a lot of similarity because it's July and they're about to play football in a month. Right. So, not to defend your CI, I think your brain's in the right place with what you're thinking here. But you definitely don't want to be good, but yeah, I don't know. You know what I'm saying. But again, take it as a learning opportunity. I think you already have, like, for you, challenge yourself not to be cookie cutter.
Right. Remember what your CI is doing for cookie cutter stuff, because you may use that, and then build upon that,
Right. And I guess don't get complacent.
Right.
Which maybe that's what's happening too, but don't get complacent and just assume that, there was a study back with the APTA one about back in the day, it was probably like 15, 20 years ago, about becoming an expert clinician. And what they found was that, you create these algorithms in your head. So they present with one thing, so you know to look at these three things, which then tell you to do these four things or something like that. But the problem with that is sometimes you're a little biased and then you get stuck in your way. Mm-hmm. So, I would say just be careful with that. Don't get biased and just make the person look how you want them to look, I guess. I don't know. I guess we could talk about
this a lot. Very common in medicine, definitely.
Yeah, having them fit into your cookie cutter, not just
of course
the other way around.
Right.
But. No, good question. Is that it, Gabe?
That was it
for today. So, awesome. That was nine? Nine, right?
Nine.
Nice, awesome. Episode nine, all done. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Hope you guys are enjoying. Help us spread the word. Maybe share this a little bit on social media. Tell your friends to join us and subscribe. And more importantly, ask us questions. So, MikeReynolds.com/podcast. Use the hashtag AskMikeReynolds on Twitter, and we'll answer your questions too. So thanks so much. Thanks for being a part of us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at mikereno.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.